Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Imbuga. This evening we'll talk about the recent Nigerian presidential elections. And with me here in studio is my colleague, Vincent Makori, host of VOA's Africa 54.
Always a delight to be here.
You're welcome. And joining us also is Karen Atia. She is the Washington Post's opinion deputy digital editor. Karen, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And joining us from South Africa is another regular panelist and friend of the show, Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban. Suleiman, good evening. I think we may have lost him, but as soon as we get him, he'll be joining us. As I said, our topic tonight is the recent Nigerian presidential elections. What lessons for Africa? This election on Saturday, people turned up in Nigeria in big numbers. It seems to have opened a new chapter with the 6 military coups since independence in 1960 and 16 years of straight and interrupted civilian rule by Jonathan's party. Let me start with Karen here. This must be a big deal.
This is a massive deal. Massive. For anybody who watches the continent and anybody who watches Nigeria and for anybody even that have been watching Nigeria over the past 2 years, there were a lot of fears with Boko Haram's terrorism, with just the high stakes of the election, that Nigeria wouldn't survive this, wouldn't survive this test. But the fact that people, A, lined up to cast their votes, that they waited out this initial six-week delay, and that there wasn't a huge widespread violence, be it from political thugs or for Boko Haram, and that we got a result that was deemed fair and credible, and that we got a concession from Goodluck Jonathan. It's a huge moment for not just for Nigeria, not just for Africa, but for democracy, I think.
I see. Well, I understand now our other panelists, Suleiman Ngura, joining us from Durban, South Africa. Suleiman, how are you?
Fine, sir. How are you?
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. The pleasure is mine.
Yeah, Vincent has just heard from Karen here. Many people sort of didn't quite expect them to go as smoothly as it eventually did.
Exactly. You know, this there is a history to Nigerian elections and results. And so people are informed by the past. And so the anticipation was that there will be chaos. Just aside from the threats by Boko Haram, it was expected that either during the campaigns or at least soon after the announcement of the final tally, there will erupt some kind of, you know, skirmish somewhere, as it has happened in the past. So it went completely contrary to the past, to the history, to the expectations. But also, I think it is kind of, it was a different time because to a large degree, I think the messages that were coming from out of Nigeria, from the ordinary voters and even the politicians themselves towards the end was those of peace. They really called out, you know, to people to maintain one Nigeria. There was a different kind of tone towards the end. It wasn't such palpable fear or threats being thrown from one side to the other. It was a surprise, a real surprise, which is a pleasant surprise for a country like Nigeria and for Africa.
Yeah, Suleiman, how was it your end there in South Africa? Were people very anxious about the outcome of this election?
No doubt about it, especially the politicians, those who are well informed, because as you know, Nigeria is the most populous country on the continent. It has got the, as of now, the strongest economy competing with South Africa. So whatever happens in Nigeria obviously affects everybody on the continent. So people are anxious, and I think it has been a relief. You realize that our president was among the first to congratulate the new leadership in Nigeria.
Yes. Karen, before the election or during the campaigns, most observers, most pundits had this idea of the North-South divide, Muslim-Christian divide. This election didn't reflect that at all.
I mean, I think you're still looking at the map breakdown, yes, of where Buhari's party, where the APC received their votes, and where Goodluck Jonathan's party, the PDP, received their votes. It did still roughly reflect a bit of that sort of crude divide that we have. We tend to think of Nigeria in. But I think what's really important is that we did have what we would say swing states or swing areas. And so this time, you know, Buhari, a Muslim northerner, made inroads into former strongholds or former states that were won by Jonathan in 2011. So it challenges this notion that often we have in the West that Muslim northerners in Nigeria will only vote for whoever is a Muslim northerner, and Christian southerners will only vote for whoever's a Christian southerner. I spoke to people who were Southern Christians and said that they were voting for Buhari because they were tired of the corruption. They were tired of Boko Haram. They wanted a change, and whoever could bring about that change, that's who they were going to vote for. So hopefully this time we saw that issues trumped identity in this election.
Yeah, recent issues, I think. You want to jump in, Suleiman? Okay,
I wanted to jump in before you go to that one. I wanted to talk about the expectation, the way my colleagues have already said so. And I want to say, yes, it was a shock the way it turned out, but we should also appreciate that unlike many African elections, the fundamentals, the basic fundamentals for a free and fair elections were in place. First of all, they had a credible electoral commission. There is no doubt that all the parties had the confidence in Atahiru Jega and his dream team. There wasn't any complaint about him. Number two, he used the modern facilities, the biometric card reading system. He had a good voter register. There was voter education. There was transportation of materials. And he assured the nation, and the nation and the politicians were all behind him. In other words, we had a machinery which was credible that it would give free and fair elections. That is why there was a huge turnout. Number two, the candidates themselves displayed maturity in their behavior. They did put up a good spirited fight. They did not personalize the issue. There was no arrogance. There was no mudslinging. And they signed at least two pacts to show that they will accept the results as they were. And number three, also, we should congratulate the condition set by the incumbent. He was never arrogant. He never tried to interfere into the system, at least openly. And number five, we have also to congratulate the security personnel within Nigeria. Unlike any other African countries, they never push their hands near to the system. So in that one, I would say, yes, much as people expected some violence and expected the opposite, what is expected of a free and fair election was in place, and some of us are not surprised that they managed to pull off such a wonderful election.
And I wanted to just add on to what Karen said. I think Nigerians, the voters, have to really be commended for having attained a level of maturity in that they went beyond what is the stereotypical expectation that the voting will be along a religious divide. It's a south and north thing. The Nigerians looked at the issues this time. The young people of Nigeria, particularly, who are like, you know, 60% of the population is 24 years and under, they were more concerned about their situation. They have no jobs in the south, and just like every other part of Nigeria, they have problems with electricity. Of course, corruption is rampant in the north. Of course, the youth have the same issues, but along with that, there was the issue of security. Many young girls have been, you know, abducted. Young men have been abducted and killed. They were more concerned about who will change their lot, who will bring a change to their circumstances so they can also enjoy a kind of a more progressive life in Nigeria. And it's because of that that when they analyzed Goodluck Jonathan and his performance over the years, they just figured he has squandered an opportunity. This is a person who had goodwill, actually, even from the northern states in the past, but he did not perform satisfactorily. And therefore, they didn't look at where he goes for worship on Sunday. They were more concerned about what has he done for the last more than 5 years that he had the opportunity to resolve some of the Nigerian issues. And that was actually the major determinant in this election.
In other words, Karen, to what extent was this election an anybody but Jonathan or any party but PDP kind of election?
I mean, there are
given those several failures.
Sure. I mean, and there are some, you know, critics, you know, skeptics of the outcome of the election that, you know, you could argue that perhaps still even Nigeria didn't have two great options as far as candidates. I mean, you know, we have to be honest that Muhammadu Buhari used to be a former military leader. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his human rights record is not spotless at all. But at the same time, I think it's a sense that again that people wanted change, mm-hmm. and that they were prepared to do that and to wait out the process in order to do that in a legitimate
but,
way.
But actually, you know, if I may add on to this, some of those who remember him, the ones who are old enough,
yes.
In fact, some of what was seen perhaps as a strong hand then. Has gone to some kind of gave him a little bit of advantage. Some people see him as a person who believed in discipline. He has a record of not being a corrupt person, but some also acknowledge he was a military ruler. So some of the things he did them under those conditions. It is not necessary that he's going to act the same way as a civilian democratic president in a country that has a legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And so while some try to use that to kind of create that kind of doubt about his performance in the future, I think it worked to his advantage to some degree. And some say we forgive some of the bad things that may have happened under his regime 1 year or so.
That's true.
Suleiman, what do you think was the contribution of Boko Haram insurgency? Because since failing to defeat them for 6 years and trying the last few weeks of the election, did that play in Buhari's favor?
No doubt about it. I think, as my colleagues have said, some of the strongest points of Buhari is that he has got a track record. He's a strong man. He was incorruptible during his time. And for him, as a soldier, as a general, he understands the army. And it is expected, and throughout his campaign, it was very clear that the question of security has been mishandled and was ready to go and solve. So it was one of the strong points which he had, because he has got a military background, and people have got hope that with him at the hearing, most likely things will change. And indeed, in his first address, he very, very well addressed the issue of Boko Haram and said the collective will of the people is going to be shown. And he has said that he is going to tackle it. It's not a simple matter which has to be relegated to a few people, but it's a collective effort which is going to chase out Boko Haram. So it was a very strong point on his side as a former military army officer.
I see. Well, let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of the recent Nigerian presidential elections. I think let's simply proceed. For those of you joining us late, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is Nigeria's presidential elections, and our panelists are Vincent Makori, host of VOA's Africa 54, Karen Atia of the Washington Post, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Studio 9. Let's talk further about the incoming president, Muhammad Buhari. He ruled as a military man. Of course, his record then wasn't of a Democrat. There are those who have issues with what happened then. He's declared he's going to be a born-again Democrat. But given the magnitude of the problem that faced Nigeria today, corruption, high unemployment, youth unemployment. The insurgency may have fizzled out during this period, but the nature of insurgency is that such that you don't need many, you don't need an army, you need a few to cause chaos. How well placed is he to handle these situations and move the country forward?
Sure. Make no mistake, he's inheriting massive challenges when it comes to Nigeria. Buhari is having to deal with an insurgency that has Boko Haram now has control over an area the size of the United States, the state of Maryland, right? Mm-hmm. So in any event, any successful strategy against Boko Haram not only will include a military component, but will necessarily have to deal with the structural poverty and the underdevelopment of the Northeast, and especially addressing, you know, youth unemployment, those who are most vulnerable to radicalization. So I think, you know, as far as whether or not Buhari is more equipped, I mean, he is from the North. He does have some of those ties, some of those allegiances. So there's potential that he could tackle that. And as well, Boko Haram, we need to understand that Boko Haram, when they first became active, one of the key targets was that they wanted to prove or to represent that the government was secular and corrupt. Mm-hmm. So potentially, you know, if Buhari is able to make inroads with corruption in Abuja, perhaps that will take away some of the reasons for radicalization in the North. If the government is able to start providing for the people in the Northeast, then that will perhaps dent, you know, Boko Haram's messaging, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's that hope, but it's no easy task.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing that has been said on the ground, it's not broadcast so widely, is that some of the people in the North felt that the government in Abuja did not take that keen of an interest in tackling Boko Haram because it wasn't affecting
them
that closely. And so there is that also perception that, you know, Buhari is from the North. He himself has been a target of Boko Haram. And everybody's going to look and see how he handles a terrorist group that is killing his own people, people of his faith, people of his region, and also an organization that has actually threatened his own personal life. And as a soldier, as a person who has dealt with the military, as Suleiman mentioned, this is a person who has no excuse in terms of his ability to strategize and to talk to the military apparatus to make sure that they can eliminate this threat. So it is a challenge first. The citizens expect him to do much more for several reasons, including the fact that he comes from there, is a Muslim, and that this group has not only targeted his own people, but even himself. So I believe he's going to do much more.
I see. Suleiman, you comment on that Buhari issue. Then I want us to move on after that to the gesture of Jonathan prompt concession and what this could mean or reflect to the greater West African region or the continent as a whole.
Okay, let me start with the challenges that General Buhari is facing. To begin with, we agree there are very huge challenges, security, unemployment, corruption, and others. But they are not insurmountable. The fact of the matter is that, like any other part of the continent, the resources are available in Nigeria, both human and finance. What has brought problems to Africa is the leadership. Point number one. Remember, Nigeria had a very serious problem in the Niger Delta. Yaradua was able to solve the problem. Why couldn't? If Yaradua could solve the problem, Niger Delta, why shouldn't Buhari not solve the problem of Boko Haram? Niger Delta was armed, was violent as much as this one is. So it depends on the character of the leadership in State House. Number two, as far as the other challenges are concerned, corruption has finished all the country's continent. Without corruption, you cannot govern people. You don't have strategies. You have got nepotism, unemployment. All those ones come as a result of corruption is the major cancer on the continent. We know, as far as corruption is concerned, with all God willing, I have the confidence, like many Nigerians, that Buhari has got the will and capacity to fight corruption in Nigeria, at least to be able to make a change which will affect other sectors, to be able to create employment and others.
Can I jump in real quickly?
Yes.
Suleiman made a very good point, and I think as far as the security challenges that we have that sometimes fly under the radar when it comes to Boko Haram, the Niger Delta region, the crisis, the militants there, it's not something that's been completely resolved. We have to remember that the amnesty contract that that the former government promised to the militants is set to expire this year. So that's going to be another security crisis potentially from the south that also the government will have to deal with. And these are, again, it's a very dangerous and a very volatile situation. So I hope we don't lose sight of that extra security challenge that Buhari will have to deal with.
But talking of the issue of corruption, before, of course, I'll allow you to comment on what this means to the rest of the continent. On the issue of corruption, how many people are, is he going to bring on board who are in the previous system, the previous arrangement?
You know, it is a big challenge because right now if you start asking people who is corrupt, who is not, you know, Buhari has said he will not tolerate anybody who is corrupt. So I think one thing he probably will do in assembling his cabinet is to look for people who are known to be clean and hopefully bring them in and create structures that ensure that nobody can commit such crimes and get away with them. Not to say that there won't be people who will still persist with this kind of malady in the society. But it's a question of how do you act against these ones? What kind of structures is he going to build? You know, the anti-corruption whatever agency and the court system, and how do you make sure that you hold people accountable for the resources that they're in charge of? Because that has been the problem not only in Nigeria but everywhere, where people are squandering and sharing the little resources that have been allocated to their ministries and whatever agencies, and nobody holds them accountable. So it's a question of him managing to get people, whether they're from the past government, but who are known to be clean people, or perhaps getting some very fresh people.
You agree?
Sure. I agree, and I think even with that will be difficult because, I mean, so with cleaning out corruption, does that mean that could hold very kind of severe implications for, say, you know, the petrochemical sector, the energy sector? Contracts could be canceled, businesses could be shut out. It could mean, you know, potentially maybe interruptions in service or interruptions in service delivery for the people while he cleans house. And then secondly, you know, how does Buhari and his administration balance tackling corruption without seeming like he's going
witch
on a witch hunt,
going,
you know, revenge. And that's tough, especially in African countries, when you have a change of power, there is a fear that the new government will come in and just punish the old government for everything that's happened. And then the next government comes in and does the exact same thing. So you have this sort of cycle. So how does he balance actively creating a culture of honesty and non-corruption without going on a witch hunt? I think that's a difficult line
delicate
to thread.
Balance,
very
yeah.
delicate.
Suleiman, briefly.
We have all our confidence, just like many Nigerians. And
you're very confident, Suleiman.
they have our prayers. At least for the first time, they have debunked. They have debunked all the myopic and the simplistic theories that the African people are in inherent retreat. They cannot decide. The African people, they are naturally corrupt. The people have taken over. The people of Nigeria have taken over. They have decided. They have taken the fate of their country into their hands. And they have given the example to all those dictators on the continent that if you give them chance and you organize a free and a fair election, they can always take the destination of their country into their own hands. They have done so. They have given Buhari a chance. They gave Jonathan a chance and he squandered the chance. He was so soft on corruption. He was so soft on security. They have decided to change and give another man. We have the confidence that maybe Buhari will make a change for the people of Nigeria. When Nigeria changes, even other countries in the West Africa and other countries on the continent, people like Museveni, Kagame, Kabila, and Biya, Yaya Jammeh. We hope they also find their way, way out.
And that means because now Buhari may have the moral authority to condemn those who are rigging elections.
Hopefully. You know, Nigeria is a huge country. It's the biggest country in Africa. Mm-hmm. And Nigerian problems are enormous. And especially corruption. Remember, corruption, anywhere it happens, especially in so many of the African countries and elsewhere, is a culture. You don't change a culture overnight. Mm-hmm. What is going to be critical is that Buhari displays the willpower of changing things. It will not happen overnight. It's not going to eliminate corruption tomorrow. But as Karen said, how do you start the process? It is what people are going to observe. And just before we run out of time, I wanted to quickly mention the transition, or rather the concession by Jonathan, was very gracious, but also was actually historic in Nigeria. For a sitting president to lose the ruling party that has been there forever, to lose to an opposition party, and the person concedes very quickly, set an example for Nigeria and many other countries. It has to be remembered that Kenya today would have been an example on the African continent for peaceful transition after an election, but it was messed up when the sitting president, the ruling party, decided to stop the vote counting and have the Electoral Commission chairman declare the president the winner in the State House and swear him at night. And so this was a very good example, and it embarrasses countries like Kenya and others that have really gone through the process so smoothly and ended up soiling it with such kind of a terrible end.
And briefly, the last few minutes or so left, Nigeria is facing, like most oil producing countries, this crunch, this fall in oil prices. How may this be a factor?
Sure. I mean, literally, the price of oil halved for Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And, unfortunately, Nigeria's economy has not diversified enough to be able to withstand these shocks in the global oil prices. So I think one thing to look out for, especially on the security front, is how is Nigeria going to pay for this? How is Nigeria going to pay for combating Boko Haram? How is Nigeria even going to, when it comes to elections, even just how are they going to fund INEC for the next round? Even now is a good time to start thinking about that. So I think that the government's revenues have been basically cut in half. And so I think it will be a real struggle, a real question into the next year or so as to how Buhari and how with both parties, how the opposition, how APC and PDP are going to work together to try to strengthen the economy and try to get more people working. And again, in the very immediate future, Nigeria's military or security forces last year has a almost $50 billion budget, right? Mm-hmm. So will they be able to sustain the military at that level? It remains to be seen.
Yeah. Briefly, 10 seconds. Do you have some final thought?
Yeah, what I say is this is a first chapter now for new Nigeria, and it sets an example for the rest of the continent. I think a big, big challenge for the country. It sets an example for the rest of the continent from now on.
Well, we shall keep looking to our bigger brother, Nigeria, to see how it's doing. And the next, we didn't have time to talk about this 2-month transition period. Some people have said it should have been shorter, but that's a topic for another time. This is all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Karen Atia, Washington Post's opinion deputy digital editor, my colleague Vincent Makori, host of Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Karen and gentlemen, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Our producer has been Jackson Mufunganyi, and we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, just go to our main website at www.voanews.com, click on programs, scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you can listen to the whole program there. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington.